Blog Talk Radio.
Podcast. My name is Sakun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and with me are my co-hosts, Ryan Whitfield and Joey Alibro, and of course, Ryan, not on time, once again. It's okay, we're used to that. How you doing, Joey?
I'm doing good. As I mentioned before, it's a dead week for Georgia high school football, so no practices and workouts this week. Just doing a little R&R. Hopefully the kids are social distancing and not getting into viruses so we can get back at it next Monday.
Yeah, so most definitely. And I think when we were just talking about before the show, the prospects of football actually coming back, because there have been a number of D2, D3 schools that have already canceled their entire season for college football. And I know that, Joey, you mentioned that you thought that probably had to do with the fact that it probably wasn't a big financial gain for them to stay open when they didn't have the ability to pack those stadiums. But, you know, what do you think? What do they think our chances are for kind of getting through this NFL season? Because already we have that Hall of Fame game rescheduled. So what do you think? The rest of them going to go, or are we going to get there?
Like I mentioned on our previous pod a couple weeks ago, you asked me kind of the same question, and I said, you know, expect preseason, the first couple weeks at least, to be canceled because teams need time to prepare. There's not really going to be any sort of, like, semblance of a training camp that we're used to. And just piggybacking on what you said about the D2, D3 schools, you know, canceling their season. In one of my classes here at UGA, I'm an economics and sport management major, so one of my classes focused on, you know, the finances of college programs. And especially at that level, they're not generating, like, any profit, or let alone enough to sustain a football program when there's no fans.
Sure.
Those moves don't surprise me at all. But I feel sorry for those players, those fans, those coaches that have worked hard. Hopefully they can get back at it in the spring.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that, and I'm sure that has a huge part to do with it. And I am actually kind of, and I know that Scott King from Marsite ran a little bit of a poll on Twitter and asked whether people thought we were going to have a football season as normal, or one without any fans, or with fans in the stands. And for the most part, people thought that we would have a football season without any fans at all. Will be a little bit weird, but, you know, I think it's going to be really difficult if you allow any fans in the stands to get social distancing right. So I think that's all going to play in here as we go forward. But, hey, we're all ready for the season to start. We're all going to have to plan for that. And, of course, we had some big news in the NFL with a nice free agent signing that was about 3 months in the making. So, yeah, you know what? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about some good stuff. Let's get this rolling. All right, first thing I want to talk about is Cam Newton, because, hey, that is the big news of the week for the NFL, right? On June 28th, the New England Patriots signed quarterback Cam Newton, formerly of the Carolina Panthers, to a one-year contract, which is reportedly an incentive-laden deal worth up to $7.5 million. The former MVP, just recently turned 31, was released by the Panthers back on March 24th. Feels like an eon, a lifetime ago now, but essentially got no suitors in that time, but for a quick check-in by the Browns. So no other really options, and surprisingly, the New England Patriots sweep in, and of course, in some ways, overshadow the fact that they were fined a certain amount of cash for that sideline filming at the Bengals-Browns game last season, and of course, lost a third-round draft pick in 2021, but they did kind of overshadow it with the signing. It's a big signing. Cam Newton only appeared in two games last season thanks to a foot injury and shoulder injuries that kind of plagued him in the past. But it's a big deal. He has lots of upside there. He's going to be competing with Jared Stidham, who everyone thought was going to be that starting quarterback for the New England Patriots. But Cam Newton certainly will give him a run for his money, even if he's not 100% healthy. So let's talk about Cam Newton and the New England Patriots. What do you think about this signing here, Joey?
My first initial reaction to reading the news was I just laughed my ass off. Because it's such a typical Patriots move. It's, like, genius, but it's so simple that you can't even consider it genius. We're talking about a guy that is a former a former MVP. He took his team to a Super Bowl. And granted, they lost to the Broncos that year. But we're talking about a talented quarterback. And the fact that, okay, I don't want to diss on your Bears here, but the fact that they went out and got Nick Foles, who they're paying $20 million this year, instead of going to pay $7.5 minimum for Cam Newton. Cam Newton's leaps and bounds better than Nick Foles, even on 1 foot and a bad shoulder. I'm sorry.
Right.
And then you
only
see Marcus
one of them
Mariota.
Is a Super Bowl MVP, though.
That's right. That is right. You see Marcus Mariota go and get that huge contract for like a backup quarterback who's now the highest paid backup quarterback in the league. I know Cam didn't want to be a backup, and I don't blame him. He doesn't deserve to be a backup. But I really, really love this move by the Patriots. I wish I could hear Ryan's thoughts on this. I think he'd be a fan of it, just price tag. And considering it's a one-year deal, you know, if he's not healthy, you know, cut your ties, move on. It's such a Belichickian move. Like, any below a certain time, he's willing to take a risk on him. We've seen him with Antonio Brown. We saw it, 14 years ago at this point with Randy Moss. Chad Ochocinco was the starting receiver in Super Bowl for the Patriots. You know, he's willing to take a risk on high upside veterans, which is something that a lot of teams need to catch on to at this point. I mean, James Harrison was a Patriot of the screw. Reggie Wayne. And Cam Newton's still young. He's turning 31, or he's 31 now. And by all means, his health is like an important factor in how this contract plays out and how his season plays out. But I watched his rehab video that he posted on YouTube, and he looks awesome. He looks in great shape. His foot looks to be completely healed up. That shoulder looks to be completely healed up. And you throw in the fact that the Patriots have a pretty freaking decent offensive line, which is going to be the best offensive line he's ever played behind. And then probably similar weapons to what he had in Carolina. I know the Patriots they don't really have a ton of talent on the receiver side. I know they drafted N'Keal Harry last year. Hopefully he's going to be a good weapon for them. But I think it's a great signing all around for everybody involved.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, last year, as we mentioned, they had a down year, lots of injuries, kind of sat it out. But I have to believe there were some motivation issues as well. Coaching staff didn't really believe in him. They were really trying to get behind some fresh legs at quarterback, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me when you had Cam Newton there. I mean, keep in mind, he was only 1 year separated from his 2018 campaign, in which he played 14 of the 16 games and still had 3,395 yards and a 67.9% pass completion rate. You know, he was good. He was solid. 24 passing touchdowns, 4 rushing touchdowns on top of that. I mean, that was a down year for him in 2018. And you look at all the other years prior to that, and he is relatively consistent all the way across the board. Decent accuracy, good amount of yards, good touchdowns, not that many interceptions. I mean, overall, he has only a 2.7% interception percentage throughout his career. This is a great get. As you said, I am shocked that it took so long. And that was 2 months ago. I had written a piece that went up on our website where I had predicted where Cam Newton would go in free agency, and I had graded them in terms of percentages, you know, what percentage he would end up at any team. The team that I thought that had the greatest percentage chance of getting him at 40% was the New England Patriots. It made so much sense to me. Even if they paid full freight, and they paid not full freight. They paid a fraction of what I think he could have gotten in any other year in which there was a quarterback drought. It just so happened that he's moving in a weird year where you have guys like Phil Rivers and Tom Brady, even Teddy Bridgewater, you know, Andy Dalton, you know, have all these guys that are just career starters and veterans that have a track record just ended up being in free agency at the same time. So just bad timing for Cam Newton, great timing as usual, unfortunately, for the New England Patriots. $7.5 million and almost entirely incentive-laden, it's just crazy. So what do you think? What are the chances that Cam Newton does not start for the Patriots at the beginning of the season and we see Jarrett Stidham out there? What do you think?
I think the odds that Cam Newton's not the starter week one are very slim, and that would have to do with anything injury-related. Cam Newton is obviously the superior quarterback to Jarrett Stidham, and I don't know why we kind of talked ourselves in to Jared Stidham over the last 6 months.
Right.
I know Ryan had, you know, heard from like his Boston guys, the beat reporters over there, about how the, you know, the Patriots are sticking with Stidham, blah blah blah. But it kind of rang similar to, you know, the storyline last year when the Cardinals were like, Josh Rosen's our guy. And then they have a chance to get a superstar talent in Kyler Murray. And they're like, you know what? Josh Rosen's our guy.
Right.
And, you know,
exactly.
No disrespect to Jared Stidham. I never liked him as a quarterback. Not to say that he isn't going to have a fruitful NFL career, either on the Patriots or on another team. But Cam Newton is just on an entire different level than him. There's a really cool podcast that's actually coming out mid-July about Cam Newton. But this Patriots move is really similar to a lot of moves he's made in his career. You know, he started his college career at Florida before getting a little bit of trouble. And then he had to go to a small school, Blinn College in Texas, where he won a national championship at that level. And then the 1 year at Auburn, where he won a national championship. And those teams were basically devoid of talent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a one-year deal with the Patriots, it kind of mirrors those two situations. The podcast called The Cam Chronicles with Tyler Tynes of The Ringer, that he interviewed like Cam's family, Cam himself. And that's like a rarity because Cam Newton's kind of a private figure. It might not seem like it with his boisterous personality, but he hasn't had a sit-down interview with anybody in 5 years. So I'm really looking forward to that one. So you guys should go check that out. July 13th, I believe, is the date that that's released.
Yeah, it sounds great. Sounds really, really interesting. Now, there's two. So first of all, let me just say this. I love the fact, Joey, that you started that sentence off with, no offense to Jared Stidham, but I never liked him as a quarterback. It's almost like, well, I don't know if I can take it any other way, honestly. But, okay, I get it. The other thing I'll mention about the Patriots, though, the fact that – and I hate saying that they're brilliant, but they are in terms of the way they manage their organization. Maybe not so much in the fairness and not cheating category, but certainly in the way they manage their organization. So just at the time that they get, and it gets announced that they are going to be fined for this sideline issue with regard to filming the Browns and Bengals game last year, where they are fined $1.1 million and they lose their 2021 third-round pick. They go ahead and they sign Cam Newton for an incentive-laden deal worth up to $7.5 million, so pennies on the dollar, and it's 1 year. And it turns out that if Cam Newton does well and walks away, the New England Patriots will actually qualify for a compensatory pick in the third round. So they basically have just managed to get that pick right back, honestly, because it's unlikely that Cam Newton – so one of two things is going to happen, in my opinion. He'll do well and he'll stay and they're going to be great with Cam Newton, or he'll do well and he'll leave and they'll get their third-round compensatory pick, and that will make up for what they lost for that sideline filming. And once again, somehow Bill Belichick makes it all work out. So anyway, brilliant move by the Patriots.
I don't know. I don't know if we're categorizing it as brilliant, but that's just in context to the morons that run teams across the league. Like, it's brilliant.
Okay, that's a fair point.
Because the other team didn't make the move, but I feel like every, like, above IQ person that's really into football could have seen this move coming from a mile away. And to the point you said about the incentive-laden deal, another really smart thing that the Patriots did, or I guess you could say, you know, normal thing the Patriots did, was that they didn't include a line in his contract that after the season – he couldn't be franchise tagged, meaning after the season he can be franchise tagged. So if he does have a great season and they don't want him to walk away, they have no faith in Jared Stidham, whatever, they can franchise tag him for that ridiculous $35 million price tag, which is another cool stipulation in that contract.
Yeah. Well, you add it up and you divide by two, and all of a sudden it's actually very reasonable, right? So that's a pretty good deal, even if they do franchise tag him on a 2 year. So it'll be like a 2 year deal at a little bit under $20 million a year. That's basically what we're paying a lot of quarterbacks that are nowhere near that caliber. So, with that said, let me ask you this question about quarterbacks in new places. I ran a poll earlier this week that ended already, and what I asked people was, which quarterback in a new location has the best chance to end up having a top 10 season? The candidates were Teddy Bridgewater, Cam Newton, Tom Brady, or Philip Rivers. So all those guys played elsewhere last year. Now they're in a new location. What do you think? Which one of those four do you think have the best chance to come away with a top 10 season?
What's funny is I actually got the news that Cam Newton was a Patriot because he had sent that poll to me. And I was like, why
did
you include Cam Newton? Cam Newton's on a team. So I went on Twitter really quick and I was like, holy shit. But I believe I voted Tom Brady in the poll before I knew Cam was a Patriot. But actually, I would probably stick with Brady just because there's there's not a whole lot of injury concern with Brady. I know he's up there in age. Plus, he's got a ton of weapons that we've already discussed that ad nauseum with the Bucs and Brady and Arians and Evans and Godwin and Gronk and Howard.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So I'm really sticking with Brady. Not to say that I don't think Newton's going to knock it out of the park in New England, because I think he will. But I think Brady's the safe pick there.
And interestingly, that poll ended and Tom Brady was the winner. 38.9% of you thought that Tom Brady would have the best chance to have a top 10 season in 2020 in his new location. Cam Newton close behind at 33.3%. Philip Rivers at 27.8%, so very close race between those three in many ways. Teddy Bridgewater, 0%. No one thought that Teddy Bridgewater had a chance at top 10 QB stats at the end of 2020. Not a big surprise, but will be interesting to watch. Certainly lots of old faces in new places will make for a very interesting 2020 season. So with that said, I want to move on to our next topic here, because this is something that and I'm going to hit the bell on this level and this subject and move on. And this is something actually that Ryan wanted to talk about, but Ryan obviously, again, has no ability to tell time and is not here. So let's just go ahead and run right into it, because this, I think, is an interesting concept. And that's talking about those second-year prospects for fantasy football. Every year we see a lot of these rookies really break out in the first year. And the question is it a mirage? Or are they going to keep it going? Are they going to take it to the next level? And how do you assess that for your fantasy football draft? Who are you going to take a chance on? So let me ask you that question. What second-year players do you think have a chance to break out as something that you would target in your fantasy football drafts in 2020?
There's a few guys that a lot of the fantasy talking heads are talking about. Miles Sanders is a big one. But I'm going with two homer picks. Homer pick.
Uh-huh.
The first one, obviously, Daniel Jones. He's my guy in New York. Last season, threw for 24 touchdowns, 3,000 yards, 12 interceptions, and a whole bunch of fumbles. But that was it. I know a lot of people are talking about the turnovers, but in just 13 games, I think those are really impressive numbers, and I think if Tua comes out and has those types of numbers, Joe Burrow comes out and has those types of numbers, they're going to win Rookie of the Year this year. But nobody's talking about Daniel Jones because it's the easy thing to do is to hate on Daniel Jones because of the whole fiasco and that pick, and making fun of Dave Gettleman is like a pastime for NFL writers at this point. But I think Jason Garrett at the helm for our offensive coordinator. A really improved offensive line with Andrew Thomas holding down the left side, presumably with moving Nate Solder to the right side. Will Hernandez going into his, I believe, third season at left guard is going to be huge for Daniel Jones and that offense. And then I want to talk about another guy who he's going to be throwing to. That's Darius Slayton.
Darius Slayton, right? All right, I love it. See, this one I like.
definitely a homer pick, but I really think he's going to have a great year. Last year he had 48 receptions, 740 yards, and 8 touchdowns. With a rookie quarterback and being drafted as late as he was, I think that was a stellar production that nobody saw coming. And he's probably going to be receiver one for the Giants with Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard manning the slot positions. So expect to see a whole lot of targets to Darius Slayton. I know there's a lot of key pieces in the offense. Barkley gets a lot of touches and a lot of balls thrown at him. But Evan Ingram, and then I mentioned before Shepard and Tate. But I really think Slayton's going to be the breakout number one receiver for that team.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that, and I'll also mention that Slayton ended up having a receiving grade that ranked him sixth amongst rookie players at the wide receiver position. He was also had seven receptions that resulted in a gain of at least 30 yards. That is the 16th most in the league. That's a lot. That's some good numbers for a rookie wide receiver being thrown to most of the year by a rookie quarterback, who, by the way, Daniel Jones, I'm not as confident about him that he's going to take that big step forward. I do want to see him fix that fumbling issue. 17 fumbles on the year, the most in the NFL. Generally something you don't want to be known for. I mean, obviously not as turnover prone as Jameis Winston, but that's, you know, another level. So
we've seen really good quarterbacks have really bad fumbling rookie years. Who do you think is right behind him for second all time fumbles as a rookie? It's Carson Wentz, who had 17 in his rookie year with Philadelphia, and we saw him bounce back, you know, leading a great Philadelphia team until obviously he got hurt and Nick Foles takes over and wins the Super Bowl. But another guy, you know, Josh Allen had 16 fumbles. Gardner Minshew had 13 fumbles. So I think that's a problem that can be easily solved with a really great summer. Obviously, coronavirus kind of impacts that. But I think he's been doing a lot of work in terms of ball security. He's also beefed up 8 pounds in muscle, apparently. So I think that should help, getting dropped in the blind side by a huge defender, dropping the ball and whatnot. But I'm pretty confident he's going to have a great season. Jason Garrett is a better offensive coordinator than he is a head coach, in my opinion, at least. I like to hate on him from his time in Dallas. It's pretty easy for me. But, you know, Dak Prescott, he's done great. Tony Romo was great. So I think you can do the same for Daniel Jones.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. I definitely love the Slayton pick. I think that he has huge, huge upside in that system, and that should grow into this season, particularly with more familiarity with Daniel Jones. So who knows? Maybe the two of them will carry each other forward. Let me ask you about some running backs, because there are actually a number of running backs, of course, that were rookies last year who had relatively good seasons and have potential in their role going into the 2020 season of having a breakout year. So here's a couple of them right off the bat. Josh Jacobs of the Raiders. And we have, of course, David Montgomery from my Bears. And we have Devin Singletary from the Bills. So we got Devin Singletary, David Montgomery, Josh Jacobs. Any one of those guys look like they might have a breakout season in their second year?
Josh Jacobs is the first name that pops out immediately to me. He's probably a top five running back in football already in terms of his talent. I'm not sure what numbers he put up last year off the back of my hand, but I think he's a really talented guy. He could serve as your running back one, if I'm being honest, next year. David Montgomery in Chicago is another interesting name. I'm not really sold on Devin Singletary in Buffalo. I think it could be a good piece, but I'd lean definitely towards Josh Jacobs if you're talking about sophomore breakout seasons.
Okay, yeah, I can buy that. I really do think that there's a lot of potential there for Josh Jacobs. He already is pretty much a breakout, so I don't know how much more he can break out at this point, but I certainly do think that he does have the best chance to keep that going. I actually think Devin Singletary has a lot of upside here and could actually be even better next year since he's no longer going to have that much competition in the backfield. He did have an amazing ability to miss tackles, to make missed tackles. 0.24 missed tackles per rush attempt, third best amongst running backs in the NFL, and the second highest rate of carries that went more than 10 yards, at 16.4%. So Devin Singletary, a guy I really like. I wish I could say David Montgomery, but I have no faith in the Bears offense at all. Let me throw you a couple wide receivers. I know you already mentioned Slayton, so I'm not going to mention him, but a couple of big names here. A.J. Brown of the Tennessee Titans, obviously big breakout so far last year. Terry McLaurin, also a really big breakout. Debo Samuel, looking like a guy that could be a really big guy into the future. And DK Metcalf of the Seattle Seahawks. Of those four guys, any of those guys look like they're going to be big breakouts in the second season in their position?
OK, Terry McLaurin's going to finish the season as a top 10 wideout. My mind slipped when making my list of breakouts, but he's the guy. I think he's better than Slayton. He had a phenomenal season last year, and I think he's going to have an even better season this year. Other guys you mentioned, DK Metcalf is another one. I know Seattle likes to go, they're really run heavy. They don't have enough faith in Russell Wilson, in my opinion. So I'm not sure how many targets he's going to get. And then you mentioned Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown with Tennessee, I really don't like them re-signing Ryan Tannehill. I think he's average at best. I think Derrick Henry carries that team. I know I kind of knocked on him in our Busts and Sleepers podcast, but I don't think I would put all my eggs in my A.J. Brown basket and Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback. So McLaurin by a mile. I think he's a real legit stud in that receiver group.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can agree with most of that, but I do think AJ Brown deserves a little more credit. League leading 2.98 yards per route run over his first rookie season. Pretty good for a rookie, particularly with Ryan Tannehill throwing to him. I don't think he's any great shakes, but heck, if he can do that with Ryan Tannehill last year, why can't he do that with Ryan Tannehill this year, is the way I see it. And I think we finally got Ryan on the phone. Ryan, is that you?
So it's fair to finally ask at some point just who the hell do I think I am. Since quarantine started, on top of being super busy, half the time I don't know what day it is. I finally,
clearly.
I think I mentioned on the show before, I run the PFF Arizona Cardinals page. So that's the Twitter I'm primarily logged into. I'd gone through all my notifications. I was like, huh, switch over to my personal one. And so I saw you messaging me.
Well, at least you didn't sleep through it this time, Ryan. Like, come on, Ryan. Are we so boring that you can't even stay awake for our own podcast? I mean, like, really? Seriously? Is that where we are right now?
I feel like I live in a cave. I take 5:30 p.m. naps half the time. It's just a weird time to be alive. So, anyway.
Wow, dude.
You
somehow, like, jumped forward to 80 years old somehow. You're taking 5:30 naps. Amazing. Hey, listen, so we were just talking about your topic, Ryan, breakouts in their second year. We just got through a whole list of them, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. Of course, you won't be surprised to hear that Joey picked Daniel Jones and Darius Slayton. I'll give you a second to rage against that if you'd like it in a minute. We also talked about A.J. Brown, Terry McLaurin, Josh Jacobs, Deebo Samuel, and DK Metcalf, as well as Devin Singletary and David Montgomery. Not all as breakouts, but just, grading their relative chances of doing well next season in their current positions and kind of continuing what they've done in their rookie season. So let me get yours. Come on, Ryan, fire it away. You must have had some stuff in mind because this is your topic. So what do you think?
Yes. So I'll say, actually, and this is not a Patriot bias, and this actually ties into the whole the Cam Newton thing. It's so fun and funny to me. The amount of people out there that now are calling, certain Patriot fans Jarrett Stidham truthers. I'll be on the record to say I never guarantee Jarrett Stidham will be an elite quarterback. But what I will say is that people aren't grading enough or accounting for just how unpass friendly that Auburn offense is. In Stidham's senior year, which was Slayton's senior year, they by 2% more than any other team. So they were first for amount of screen passes, and the next closest was 2% lower than them. I believe it was like 23% of their pass plays were scripted screen passes. So when you have that, the guys who are supposed to be in the vertical downfield game are going to be discounted. So I was high on Darius Slayton coming into last year. I've watched, because of my interest in the Pats and just through PFF, I had multiple games that I had to watch for them during my trial stuff. I got a couple Auburn games when I was first practicing with them. So I, unlike a lot of people with opinions, have watched a fair amount of that senior year for Slayton and Stidham, or they might have been juniors, whatever, the final season in Auburn. So I'm a big Slayton guy, and I like Slayton. I will disagree on Daniel Jones, but I like Slayton's upside. As far as a couple other guys, just to touch on some guys you didn't touch on, in some offenses, well, I guess I'll touch on A.J. Brown too quickly first. A.J. Brown, I see a regression for him that entire Tennessee offense. What you saw in the final 2 months of the season was their ceiling. That was the ceiling of Ryan Tannehill. That was Derrick Henry's ceiling. I don't think that's A.J. Brown's ceiling, but when all the other parts come back down and they go back to more of a run-first team and more of a middling team, which is what I think is closer to the truth than what we saw at the end of last year, that's just going to take A.J. Brown down a step. I disagree. I think that re-signing Ryan Tannehill, well, there are other options, but if the other option, the main option on the table was Tom Brady, then I would take a guy who's been in your system and succeeded there instead of bringing a whole new offense for a guy who's going to be done in 2 or 3 years. So, but anyway, that offense is going to take a step back until they get another better quarterback. A.J. Brown, I think the ceiling fantasy-wise is probably what we saw last year, just until they get a better quarterback in that offense. Two other guys that I had that I wanted to mention, one being a guy I was really high on last year going into the draft. By the time the season started, I actually cooled off on, and then he actually went on to have a pretty successful rookie season, and that's Noah Fant. I think the extra weapons added in to the Denver offense actually benefits Noah Fant. Now Noah Fant's going to be even less on the game planned against from the defense. And for a guy who I believe was second for tight ends last year, it might have been all players, with 14.1 yards per reception, he showed that he can be a downfield vertical threat. Again, now you have even more weapons in that offense this year. So I think that the bulk will not be on Noah Fant in terms of defensive coverages, and he can excel in that. And then a guy who I'm also close to, just because of what I said about the Twitter account I run earlier, with DeAndre Hopkins coming into Arizona, very high on Kyler Murray. I think they're still a middling team because I think their defense is not good, are not good enough. But I actually was just looking at a few minutes ago, Murray actually tied for first in completions of 50 yards or more last year with 6. And that's, I know Demir Byrd, who's a, speedster downfield kind of guy. But that outside of that, that's with Larry Fitzgerald past his prime. That's with Christian Kirk, Isabella, all these okay targets, but not anything elite. And now you have a real true elite number one receiver who can get downfield for you. So I think Kyler Murray in that offense puts up a lot of numbers this year. I think they're the kind of team that's going to lose a lot of games, 31-24, 34-28, something like that. So I don't expect them to be a playoff team. Well, I guess everyone gets in the playoffs now, so they might be. Long story long there. Kyler Murray, fantasy-wise, I think has a realistic chance to finish as a top-10 fantasy quarterback this year.
Yeah, well, I love that pick. I mean, Kyler Murray had an up-and-down season, but obviously the ceiling is quite high, and it doesn't hurt to have DeAndre Hopkins to throw the ball to. So and one more year under his belt, certainly commitment from the Arizona Cardinals, sky's the limit. Let me ask you guys about another group of wide receivers, and I'll ask both of you what you think. If any of these guys look like they might be targets for you into the 2020 season after their rookie years, Mecole Hardman from the Kansas City Chiefs, Deontay Johnson from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Preston Williams from Miami Dolphins, and Olabisi Johnson in the Minnesota Vikings. So I'll repeat that again. Hardman from the Chiefs, Johnson from the Steelers. We got Williams from the Dolphins and Johnson from the Vikings. Any of those guys interest you as a potential breakout in their second season? Well, we'll start with you, Joey, since we just heard from Ryan.
All right. This is obviously a homer pick with my Georgia Bulldogs. I really like Mecole Hardman coming out of the draft last year. We talked about him a lot. Before the draft last year, after the draft last year, and then the fantasy preview podcast last year, he had 26 receptions, 538 yards, and 6 touchdowns last year with a 20.7 average per reception, which is ridiculous. He's a speed guy, not very different from Tyreek Hill in that offense. I could see him taking a step forward, probably around the 45 receptions, 700-yard season that Darius Slayton just had. I just don't think he's as important in that Chiefs offense, but he's my favorite out of that group. I don't know a ton about the other guys. I would probably lean Preston Williams as the second guy making a leap. Miami with drafted Tua, I think that could be good for Preston Williams. I'm not sure about the other two guys, Deontay Johnson. I don't remember the other guy. But Hardman and Williams are probably the two guys over here.
Right, the other guy. So what do you think, Ryan? What do you think about that? Are you interested in any of those four guys, Mecole Hardman, Deontay Johnson, Olabisi Johnson, or Preston Williams?
Yeah, so as Joey mentioned, given his bias, I think that we as a podcast talked about Mecole Hardman going into the draft more than a lot of people did.
We did.
I know that particularly Joey and I had separate DMs going back and forth about Mecole Hardman, where I was watching a lot of game film on him coming out of Georgia and really liked what I saw. So mm-hmm. I think from a talent-wise, he might be the best in the group. But there's just, I mean, he's just too far down that depth chart to me. You know, mm-hmm. so I just, what you saw last year is what I would expect this year. I just don't think there's a big, I don't see him taking on a bigger share of targets, which is what you're looking for a jump in player. So I just don't think that that's going to be realistic for him. Again, if I'm drafting a team and you're asking me which four I'm putting on my team, he might be, he probably is the number one guy I'd put. But you know, there's just too many mouths to feed there. And unfortunately, even though he's always one soft tissue, issue or injury away from sitting out for 6 weeks, we saw probably Sammy Watkins' best season, on a play by play basis. You know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but, just from a performance standpoint and in, you know, achieving standpoint, again, just, you know, what his role in the Super Bowl, everything he did last year, I don't know. They probably couldn't be bigger on Sammy Watkins than they are right now. So I would say that's one that, you know, I like the player. In a dynasty league, sure, get your Mecole Hardman shares, you know, trade for him, stash him, whatever. But I think the number one guy, and this is the guy I wrote about a lot last year on my DFS column at PFF, was like Preston Williams. The amount it took for people to catch on to what he was doing in Miami. And then, of course, once everyone – he's one of those guys, right, that was like – it was six elite weeks in a row where he was finishing as like a top 12 wide receiver. And I'm sure he didn't finish top 12 every time. But, like, he was somebody outperforming his money every single week on FanDuel and DraftKings. And then finally when the price caught up to him and people started grabbing him off of waiver wires in every league I was in, he then got hurt and was out for the season. So
that's right.
Preston is a guy that I'm very excited to see a second year. You know, Tua's got a lot of question marks, injury history, all that. But I think we can all agree that if he is the day one starter, the Miami pass offense should be better. And I expect Preston Williams to be a major part of that. I'm very high in Preston Williams. Deontay Johnson is a guy I talked about coming into the draft last year or coming out of the draft last year. And there's just one thing I can't get past. He had a good rookie year, you know, not great. And we obviously know everything that happened with the quarterback carousel all the way down to Duck Hodges last year. So
it was hard
to really blame Deontay Johnson having a breakout rookie year. But all I know is that I know he was a little less known, but there were several somehow from our friend of the show that I've done a couple podcasts on, always like retweets our stuff, Joey Bag of Donuts.
Yeah,
you know,
great
follow
guy.
On Twitter.
Just follow.
But he's constantly retweeting articles from the Pittsburgh area, so I'm a little bit more there's a little bit more of my purview. So I remember reading a couple post draft things where a couple of, you know, unnamed scouts, but scouts in the Pittsburgh organization said that it was either at pro day or the workouts or whatever. When we saw Deontay Johnson, we saw everything we saw in Antonio Brown when no one knew who Antonio Brown was. Is a really strong statement to make. I think it was a few scouts who had made that claim. So, anyways, when you hear that and then you saw what he did last year and you know that Pittsburgh up until the last couple of years has really been just an absolute, and even with Juju they hit, but I'm thinking about Martavis Bryant, which is more off field stuff. Who was the kid Coates out of, Sammy Coates, whatever school he was out of. I can't even remember, whatever. They've had quite a few busts in that position recently, but overall in the last 20 years, Pittsburgh grabs receivers that no one's ever heard of and turns them into household names. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of Mike Wallace go other places and suck. So, you know, I'm going to bank on them. And I think he's the best number two option there. I'm not a big Washington guy. I like Deontay Johnson's tape better. So I like him. In terms of Pittsburgh, I'm just going to be honest, like Joey, I don't watch him enough to have any real depth or knowledge on him. All I know is that obviously there's a hole to fill there, so that might be a deeper stash because, you know, you do have Stephon Diggs targets to replace. But I still think that they're hell-bent on being more of a run-first offense, and I actually like Irv Smith Jr. to take more of those targets that are going to be taken away or that are going to be available from Stephon Diggs because I feel like that plays to Kirk Cousins' game more than obviously the vertical threat, which is why they ultimately decided to move on from Stephon Diggs.
Yep, and Sammy Coates from the same place that that guy we talked about earlier today was from, Auburn. We got, you know, Cam Newton there from Auburn, obviously a couple years before Sammy Coates, but Sammy Coates out of Auburn back in 2014. So, but where is he now, I guess, is the question. Some good points there. Let me just follow up on one thing. I love the discussion about Mecole Hardman, and I will just say this, that last year he didn't get the targets, probably won't get the targets this year, but had only dropped one catchable target the entire season and had 153.9 passer rating when targeted. This guy is amazing. They got to use him more often. But there's just too many mouths to feed in Kansas City, so I agree with that. And, of course, the entire thing of Preston Williams, I hope he comes up. Ooh. Yep, sorry?
Well, not to mention, before we move on, that their first round draft pick is another ridiculous passing weapon, much more so than Damian Williams and Darwin Thompson and everybody else who rolled through there, LeSean McCoy last year. Like, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he's at his peak, is gonna receive a good chunk of targets this year too. So it's just another person you have to factor in that Kansas City pass game.
Great point. Absolutely. Yes, there's a lot of mouths to feed over there. So talent is not all you need. You also need opportunity, which is why I do like Deontay Johnson being the potential number two out there in Pittsburgh, having a breakout season, Big Ben back, whether you like it or not, obviously better than all the options they rotated through last season. And guess what, guys? We're at the end of our show. It's going to hit the air horn on the show. We actually have used up all our time and more. We're in overtime right now. And we're in overtime because of the fact that Ryan showed up. I'll just say stylishly late. Well done.
That's
so. Well, I'm just saying, man. Let's put it this way. We saved the best for last. How's that? We saved the best for last. Ryan's in the hair at the end here, giving us all that information. So there you go, guys. Everybody got what they wanted. Listen, always a great time. Always happy to have people come out here and listen to us. But, you know, follow everybody on social media. Some great tweets out there. Ryan mentioned a bunch of them, Joey Bag of Donuts being one of them. Also, follow Ryan on his PFF account as well. But, Ryan, give us your social media so people can follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me at Ryan Whitfield, N-E as in New England. And just to sign off on that one last time, if you're the first person to show up at the red carpet, you're probably not an A-list celebrity. So, you know, I like to show up when everyone's
got
their...
That's fair. And just remember, when you follow Ryan... don't expect him to return your DMs. That's all I have to say. That's all, you know. Anyway, and Joey, why don't you give us your social media so people can follow you?
Well, I was very curious about Ryan's thoughts on Cam Newton, but I'll probably have to hit him in his DMs for that. But you guys can follow me at Joey Libro on all social media platforms.
You know, that's really funny because we had this whole segment built up around this because we were all excited to hear from Ryan. So, Ryan, you know what? We've got to give the people what they want. Give us 30 seconds on what you think about Cam Newton as a Patriot.
Yes. So this is the thing that I was saying, talking over you there, that Wole reached out to me yesterday in DMs and asked for my thoughts. So, you know, he actually cared about me enough to reach out personally. But anyway, the one time I give him credit, this was just to take a shot at the rest of the world. But no.
Well, we got to clip that, David.
It's the perfect signing for the Patriots right now. First of all, I think Cam held out waiting for a better deal. No better deal existed. He became, you know, aware of the fact that, like, his options were dwindling. And so the Patriots went and got him for next to nothing. And so, you know, I have several thoughts on it, and I'll run through them super, super quick. You know, basically, high reward, no risk. And the big X factor with Cam is he passes injury prime. There's injury issues. Because 31 years old, people trying to call him old. He's not old. 31 years old is young. The Patriots just got rid of their quarterback who was 41. So, I mean, if you play the position a certain way, you can play for forever. Obviously, he plays a different way. But still, with his body, he should be able to maintain another 5 to 8 years of good football, I believe. So, hopefully, the injury stuff for the last 3 seasons has passed him, and then the Patriots can play a more college-style offense with him there. As pertaining to Jarrett Stidham, I don't think this is a disavowance of – belief in Jarrett Stidham. I believe that this is really about, like, this. There's nothing normal about this offseason. He's got to replace the greatest quarterback of all time, and now to do it on a shortened offseason with limited workouts and everything that's going on, I just think you might as well bring in Cam Newton. If Cam Newton goes off and he's the guy and he's better than Jarrett Stidham, then maybe you reinvest in him next year. If Jarrett Stidham beats out Cam Newton, then great. And if Jarrett Stidham, because this is the big backlash from some people in New England, saying that Jarrett Stidham, this is going to shake his confidence, you're going to ruin the kid doing this. If Jarrett Stidham, as a quarterback who has to run the whole offense, be the CEO of a football team, if he gets shaken because you brought in a former MVP on the league minimum and he goes the other way, then he was never meant to be the long-term quarterback here in the first place because he's too mentally
right.
weak. So I think there's an opportunity for him to step up and take the team. If not, you get Cam Newton for a year, and hopefully, you know, the rest of you have to cry as the Patriots go on a deep run again.
Yeah. Oh, big. I for once, I agree with everything you said there, Ryan, and in particular, the last part about competition. Well, I'm not going to go that far. Let's not get crazy, all right? Anyway, hit the bell on that one. Thanks for your thoughts. And everybody, once again, thank you so much for listening to us. Thanks again for coming out and also wasting time with us, I should say. And until next time, enjoy your NFL week. And perhaps next time we're going to get a full whole episode of Ryan Whitfield.
As we're signing off, at Julio Libro, follow him on Twitter.
That's right.
Thank you.